Hey guys, I'm Valerie.
And I'm Jasmine, and this is Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
Welcome back to season 11, where we are talking about killers caught on tape. And today I have a story from you, one of which is in the news very recently, but it's actually kind of two different stories that I'm going to tell you together. So I'm going to tell you first the story about Sarah Everard, and then the story about Sabina Nessa. The sources for this episode are Sky News, BBC News, Irish Times, The Guardian, Manchester Evening News, Judiciary.uk, The National News, Irish Examiner, My London News, Washington Post, CNN, The Journal, Greenwich Students' Union, The Evening Standard, The Independent, Wales Online, and The Herald Scotland. I do want to give you a trigger warning. We are going to be discussing sexual assault and rape in this episode. Are you familiar with either one of these names?
I am not, actually.
Okay. This takes place in the UK, so the majority of our listeners do live in the US, but we do have some UK listeners. So this is probably a familiar case to those of you who live there. So I'm going to tell you first about Sarah, only because her case happened first. So Sarah Everard was born in 1987 in Surrey, England. She grew up with parents Susan and Jeremy and with two older siblings, James and Katie. She studied human geography at Durham University and moved to London after graduating to live near her siblings. In 2013, she spent some time traveling through South America. She was an intelligent, talented, and caring person. And in 2021, when she was 33 years old, she worked as a marketing executive and was dating a man named Josh. On March 3rd, 2021, around 9:30 p.m., Sarah was walking home from a friend's house when she was stopped by an undercover police officer, Wayne Cousins, who was doing patrol. Now, at this time, coronavirus restrictions were in order, and people were supposed to be only leaving their house for necessary means. The officer raised his arm to show Sarah his warrant card and asked her the questions regarding the COVID regulations before he handcuffed her and placed her in the back of his unmarked car. Though the police officer had done patrol for coronavirus and knew all the right regulations, the car was unmarked for a reason. It was actually a rental car that he had picked up that day. And at the time of Sarah's quote-unquote arrest, he wasn't on duty. 48-year-old Wayne Cousins had a long history as a police officer. He volunteered for the police from 2005 to 2009 and became a special sergeant. In 2011, he had an incredibly high level of security clearance and officially became an officer. He joined the Metropolitan Police Force in 2018, where he began doing coronavirus regulation patrol during the height of the pandemic. Wayne was married with two children. He had recently told coworkers that he might take sick leave because he was stressed due to a pay dispute, something that he was considering actually quitting over. He also said that he was about $40,000 in debt. On March 3rd, 2021, Wayne got off work at the U.S. Embassy in London at 7 a.m. like usual. Though he didn't have to report to work that night, he told his family that he did. At 3 p.m., he picked up a rental car in Kent that he had booked on February the 28th. He drove the car from there to London, which is roughly an hour drive, and bought 14 hairbands at 8 p.m. From that purchase, he drove around until he found his perfect victim walking along the street, who was Sarah Everard, who was minding her own damn business. As I previously told you, he falsely arrested Sarah and put her in the back of the vehicle, but they didn't go to the police station. Instead, he took her phone, removed the SIM card, and drove 80 miles away. He took her to a remote area where he raped her. And then, at some point in time after that, he strangled her with his belt. They cannot pinpoint her exact time of death, but investigators believe it was before 2:34 a.m. on March 4th because he bought drinks at BP in Dover at that time. They believe that she was already deceased. He bought hot chocolate and a pastry at 8:14 a.m. while he was still in Dover. At some point during the night, Wayne discarded Sarah's phone into a river before returning home at the time that he usually would if he had worked his normal shift. The next day, March 5th, he purchased petrol and burned her body, possessions, and clothing inside of a refrigerator on property that he owned in Ashford. Later that day, he moved her body into a heavy-duty bag that he had just purchased. Sometime within 3 days of her murder, Wayne took his kids to the property so that they could play in the woods there, the very same property that he had just burnt her body on. The day after Sarah went missing, though, her boyfriend reported her missing when she didn't show up for their plans or answer her phone. The search for Sarah was all over the news, and police began gathering CCTV footage from the path that Sarah would have walked home from her last known location. They ended up with over 1,800 hours of footage. Manchester Evening News has a compilation of the CCTV and camera footage of Sarah's kidnapping. You can see her walking down the street carrying a bag. You can see a car pulling up alongside her. You can see her talking to a man next to the car. And you can see her in the back seat of the car. And I can link this video in the show notes for anybody who's interested in watching it. Now, of course, these images are from people's dash cams and from their doorbell cameras and random things like this. So, of course, the videos aren't the clearest image in the world. But they're a very good visual of Sarah and a man. Footage from a passing bus and from a driver's dash cam both had a clear view of the car that Sarah was put in, which included the license plate. So police were able to track down the license plate, which led them to a rental company, which led them to the renter, Wayne Cousins. Now, this interview, the initial interview that police had with Wayne actually took place in his house when they went to arrest him. There is a video clip that is also available online, and it's just absolutely ridiculous, and I will link this in the show notes as well for anybody who's interested. It's probably about 4 minutes long. When police went to question him, he came up with a ridiculous story. He tells police that he was in some financial shit because he ripped off a sex worker. Because of this, an Eastern European gang showed up at his house and threatened his family, unless he brought them a new woman. So he picked up someone at random, who was Sarah, and brought her to their meeting location. He said they told him, "You've done good," and he doesn't know what happened from there. At this point in time, Wayne also attempted a factory reset on his phone to get rid of any kind of record on his phone. But here's the thing about Wayne, and most narcissists for that matter. They don't cover all their bases because they assume people will believe them. So police arrest him on suspicion of kidnapping. Police had found at this point also that Wayne owned some land in Ashford. So police and dogs went out to search the property on March 10th, and about 100 meters from the property, they found Sarah's remains in bags. She was formally identified via dental records on March 12th. Her autopsy showed her cause of death as death from neck compression, which was from his belt strangling her. In addition to all of the video evidence, police also had other evidence to work with during Wayne's trial. He purchased police standard handcuffs from Amazon on February 10th, 2021, and they were found in his car. He purchased self-adhesive carpet protector on February 28th. He purchased the hairbands that we already talked about at 8 p.m. on March 3rd, which police believe were either used to restrain Sarah or to maintain his erection. He booked a rental car on February 28th for March 3rd and lied about where he was going to be. All of this is leading us back to premeditation. He ended up pleading guilty and was given a whole life order. So in the UK, a life sentence means that they can be paroled, but a life order means that there's no possibility of parole. So thankfully, that's where he's going to remain for the rest of his life. So I actually have direct quotes from the statements given by Sarah's sister Katie, her mom Susan, and her dad Jeremy that were read in court. And so we're going to go ahead and we're actually going to share that with you. I think it's a really good representation of the kind of person that Sarah was, the way that they talk about her. And there's also a little bit more detail about her unfortunate death in there as well. So Jasmine's going to read her sister Katie's statement.
"You treated Sarah as if she was nothing. Placed more emphasis on satisfying your sick, disgusting perversions than on our life. Her life. You disposed of my sister's body like it was rubbish. Fly-tipped her like she meant nothing. She meant everything. We couldn't even see her. She was so badly burnt. Her brain was removed from her skull to check for trauma and cause of death. I still don't know if they put her brain back in her head or whether it is lying next to her body in her coffin. Shards of her kneecap were returned to us to be placed with her body. Shards that you knocked when moving her burnt body from the fridge you had used to hide her and conceal the fire. We are still missing her hyoid bone from her throat, which is being checked to see if the force you used to strangle her to determine how long she may have survived. We know it was broken. Her burnt body still had her necklace and one earring in her ear. The other had fallen from her ear because it had burnt off. You hear from the police that it takes around 2 minutes to strangle someone and around 8 to 10 seconds for them to lose consciousness. At first, there is a sense of relief at hearing that your sister might only have been aware of what was happening for 8 to 10 seconds. But have you put your hands around your neck and tried pushing hard? 8 to 10 seconds now seems a long time. You used your warrant card to trick my sister into your car. She sat in a car, handcuffed, for hours. What could she have thought she had done wrong? What lies did you tell her? When did she realize that she wasn't going to survive the night? I'm constantly replaying in my head, did you rape her, then kill her? Did you kill her while raping her? You get small nuggets of information and the thought process starts again. Your semen and blood were found in your car, so this suggests you raped her in the car. You find out you may have used a belt to strangle her. New horrendous images forming. You stop to get a Lucozade and water at a petrol station. Was she still alive at this point? Bound in your car? I am horrified by your ability to flit between what you did and normal everyday actions. Your casual demeanor on CCTV was very upsetting and shocking to see. We had to go to the flat and pack up Sarah's whole life. Washing left hanging up, half-sewn outfits, deliveries waiting to be returned, packages waiting at the door ready to be opened. All signs of a life waiting to be lived, chores to be done, ready for her to return and continue when she got home. But she never got home because a predator, you, was on the loose, prowling the streets for hours looking for his prey. You can't comprehend what you are being told when it happened because it is so horrific. Some sort of sick waking nightmare. You can't imagine anyone could do such a thing. You are waiting to hear anything from the police. Every bit you get is different. You hear her body has been found. Then you find out she has been burnt. So badly burnt you can't see her. Can't see her again to say goodbye. The first thought you had in your head after despair and shock is, was she dead before you burnt her? Imagine that even having to be a thought. You find out no soot was found in her lungs, which suggests she was burnt after you murdered her. Imagine being relieved to hear your sister was dead before she was burnt. I replay it continuously round in my head. What you may have said to her, what she may have said back, when she realized she was in a grave danger and was not going to survive. Hoping my sister was unconscious and drugged, but we know that was not the case. No drugs found in her body, no trauma to the head. Burst blood vessels in her brain from your strangulation, which meant she was conscious when you were doing these unfathomable things to her. My only hope is that she was in a state of shock and that she wasn't aware of the disgusting things being done to her by a monster. When you forced yourself upon and raped her. When you put your hands around her neck and strangled her. It disgusts me that you were the last person to touch her perfect body and violate her in the way you did. The last person to see her alive and speak to her. How scared she must have been. The last moments of her life, not with loved ones, but frightening and fighting for her life. I hate to think of her being so scared and alone, and that in her last moments she had no one with her. No kindness. I hate that I wasn't there to save her, to stop you. I find it hard to believe she is not just living her own life and sick at the thought that her last moments on this earth alive were so horrific. How dare you take her from me? Take away her hopes and dreams, her life, children that will never be born, generations that will never exist. Her future no longer exists. The future I was supposed to live with my sister no longer exists. You have ruined so many lives. Sarah is the very best person with so many people who love and cherish her. I want to speak to her and hug her and hear her laugh and go out for dinners and drinks and dancing. All those conversations we can never have. There were so many things I wanted to share with her. Trips abroad, being each other's bridesmaids, meeting her babies and being an auntie, growing old together and seeing who got the most wrinkles. We weren't even halfway through our journey and you took it all away. I feel like I live in a make-believe world as if nothing is real. I have to pretend because the thought of not having Sarah forever is too hard to bear. A lifetime now seems a very long time. I should never have to write a eulogy for or bury my little sister. There is no punishment that you could receive that will ever compare to the pain you have caused us. We can never get Sarah back. The last moments of Sarah's life play on my mind constantly. I am so disgusted and appalled. It terrifies me that you have such disregard for a person's life. You have taken from me the most precious person, and I can never get her back.
I feel like every single person who has been in this situation has felt the way that Sarah's sisters felt in this moment, but her way of articulating it is so heartbreaking.
Absolutely. Like, I can almost imagine her just as calm as she could be, you know, reading this out. The fact that she went into, like, she kind of spoke, like, on some details of what happened to her sister, just to kind of, like, shove it in his face one last time of what kind of terrible, monstrous person he is. I couldn't imagine having to do that for my sister or for anybody that I loved, having to do something like that. So she's very strong for that.
I agree. And next, I'm going to read you Sarah's mom, Susan's, impact statement at court. Sarah is gone and I am brokenhearted. She was my precious little girl, our youngest child. The feeling of loss is so great, it is visceral. And with the sorrow come waves of panic of not being able to see her again. I can never talk to her, never hold her again, and never more be a part of her life. We have kept her dressing gown. It still smells of her, and I hug that instead of her. Sarah died in horrendous circumstances. I am tormented at the thought of what she endured. I play it out in my mind. I go through the terrible sequence of events. I wonder when she realized she was in mortal danger. I wonder what her murderer said to her. When he strangled her, for how long was she conscious, knowing she would die? It is torture to think of it. Sarah was handcuffed, unable to defend herself, and there was no one to rescue her. She spent her last hours on this earth with the very worst of humanity. She lost her life because Wayne Cousins wanted to satisfy his perverted desires. It is a ridiculous reason. It's nonsensical. How could he value a human life so cheaply? I cannot comprehend it. I am incandescent with rage at the thought of it. He treated my daughter as if she was nothing and disposed of her as if she was rubbish. If Sarah had died because of an illness, she would have been cared for. We could have looked after her and been with her. If she had died because of an accident, people would have tried to help. There would have been kindness. But there is no comfort to be had. There is no consoling thought in the way Sarah died. In her last hours, she was faced with brutality and terror, alone with someone intent on doing her harm. The thought of it is unbearable, and I am haunted by the horror of it. When Sarah went missing, we suffered days of agony, not knowing where she was or what had happened to her. Then, when Sarah's burnt remains were found, we spent two terrible days waiting for tests to show how she had died, fearing she had been set alight before she was dead. The thought was appalling. Burning her body was a final insult. We could never again see her sweet face and never say goodbye. Our lives will never be the same. We should be a family of five, but now we are four. Her death leaves a yawning chasm in our lives that cannot be filled. I yearn for her. I remember all the lovely things about her. She was caring. She was funny. She was clever, but she was good at practical things too. She was a beautiful dancer. She was a wonderful daughter. She was always there to listen, to advise, or simply to share with the day. And she was also a strongly principled young woman who knew right from wrong and who lived by those values. She was a good person. She had purpose to her life. My outlook on life has changed since Sarah died. I am more cautious. I worry more about our other children. I crave the familiarity and security of home. The wider world has lost its appeal. It is too painful to contemplate a future without Sarah, so I just live in the here and now. I think of Sarah all the time, but the mornings and evenings are particularly painful. In the morning, I wake up to the awful reality that Sarah is gone. In the evenings, at the time she was abducted, I let out a silent scream. Don't get into the car, Sarah. Don't believe him. Run. I am repulsed by the thought of Wayne Cousins and what he did to Sarah. I am outraged that he masqueraded as a policeman in order to get what he wanted. Sarah wanted to get married and have children. Now all of that is gone. He took her life and stole her future, and we will never have the joy of sharing that future with her. Each day dawns, and I think Sarah should be here, leading her life and embracing new experiences. She had so many years ahead of her. I don't know how anyone could be so cruel as to take my daughter's life. What I do know is that Sarah will never be forgotten and is remembered with boundless love. I cling on to memories of Sarah. I hold them tight to keep them safe. The other night, I dreamt that Sarah appeared at my home. In my dreams, I held her and I could feel her physically. Jeremy was there. We were comforting her, saying, "It's all right, Sarah, it's all right." I would give anything to hold her once more. I hope I have that dream again.
It's really sad. We can't help but think, like, what they were saying about how bad her body was, like, burnt. To the fact that they couldn't even have, like, an open casket or, like, see her, like, have a proper funeral for her.
It's so shocking. Yeah, like, you don't expect, even when you lose somebody unexpectedly, you don't expect to not be able to ever look at them again.
Right, and it's kind of like one of those conflicting things. It's like, you want to see them for one last time, but at the same time, you don't want to see them in that way. Like, right. When my grandpa died, like, I wanted to see him one last time, but, like, when I saw him, like, he obviously doesn't look the same, but
right.
It's like a catch-22, but the fact that, like, that kind of gives you some kind of closure, being able to see them for one last time, but not being able to see them because of something like that, so much trauma to their body, like, that's terrifying, and it's not fair, and it's just disgusting that he did what he did to her.
I agree. And then there's Sarah's dad Jeremy's statement that he read in court.
There's a photograph of my beautiful daughter on the screen. She had a beautiful mind too. Mr. Cousins, please, will you look at me? The impact of what you have done will never end. The horrendous murder of my daughter, Sarah, is in my mind all the time and will be for the rest of my life. A father wants to look after his children and fix everything, and you have deliberately and premeditation stopped my ability to do that. Sarah was handcuffed and unable to defend herself. This preys on my mind all the time. I can never forgive you for what you have done, for taking Sarah away from us. You burnt our daughter's body. You further tortured us so that we could not see her again. We did not know whether you had burnt her alive or dead. You stopped us seeing Sarah for one last time and stopped me from giving my daughter one last kiss goodbye. Her body fell apart when she was moved. Her brain and neck bones were removed for months by the pathologist, and her body was difficult to preserve, so we had to use the services of a specialist embalmer to enable a dignified burial. All my family wants is Sarah back with us. No punishment that you receive will ever compare to the pain and torture that you have inflicted on us. You murdered our daughter and forever broke the hearts of her mother, father, brother, sister, family, and her friends. Sarah had so much to look forward to, and because of you, this is now gone forever. She was saving to buy a house and looking forward to marriage and children. We were looking forward to having grandchildren. We loved being a part of Sarah's world and expected her to have a full and happy life. The closest we can get to her now is to visit her grave every day.
I just want to point out with his statement too, you'll notice in the beginning he asked him to look, Jeremy asked Wayne Cousins to look at him. At this point in time, Wayne raised his head a little bit, but he didn't actually make eye contact with Sarah's dad.
Because he's a coward.
He is a coward. That is absolutely what sums that up. And then finally, I want to read you the statement that Sarah's family gave after the whole life order that was sentenced to Wayne Cousins. Sarah lost her life needlessly and cruelly, and all the years of life she had yet to enjoy were stolen from her. Wayne Cousins held a position of trust as a police officer, and we are outraged and sickened that he abused this trust in order to lure Sarah to her death. The world is a safer place with him imprisoned. It is almost 7 months since Sarah died, and the pain of losing her is overwhelming. We miss her all the time. She was a beautiful young woman in looks and character, and our lives are the poorer without her. We remember all the lovely things about Sarah: her compassion and kindness, her intelligence, her strong social conscience, but we especially like to remember her laughing and dancing and enjoying life. We hold her safe in our hearts. We are immensely grateful to the police and legal team who worked on Sarah's case. We cannot thank them enough for the meticulous and painstaking work and for their constant support. We also sent our heartfelt thanks to our family and friends for comforting us through this terrible time. So, rightfully so, this case led to absolute national outrage. And it wasn't even close to the only terrible thing that happened in this area around this time. Months later, another woman was murdered in London, and the outrage paled in comparison. And I want to make a point of saying that the heinous crime that was committed against Sarah is completely unforgivable, and she deserves to be talked about, and the outrage about her case was 100% necessary. The question that people have, though, was how come someone else who was brutally attacked months later didn't get the coverage that Sarah's case did? In fact, the next case that I'm going to tell you about didn't even make front page news in newspapers. And Sarah's case got the attention that it deserved. It got candlelit vigils and protests all over the country. And I cannot say it enough, it deserved that attention. It deserves still that attention. But I also want to tell you about a woman named Sabina Nessa, who is a woman who was very recently murdered, just 8 miles away from where Sarah was abducted, but who is not white. Sabina grew up in Bedfordshire, England. She had an older sister, Jabina, with whom she was very close. She studied sociology at University of Greenwich and then attended the University of Bedfordshire to get her postgrad teaching certificate. She graduated in 2020 and began working at Rushy Green Primary School, which is in Lewisham, which is southeast London. She taught year one, which I had to look up. Everything is so different in the UK and the US. So year one is ages 5 and 6, and it's the first year of mandatory school. So I guess I would call that first grade in the US. According to friends, Sabina had plans to teach in the Middle East and start a new life there, and she was an incredibly kind and caring individual. On Friday, September 17th, 2021, when Sabina was 28 years old, she had plans to meet a friend for a date. The pub that they were going to meet at was only a 5-minute walk from her apartment, and it was just through the park. So she left her apartment at 8:30 p.m., but she never arrived at the pub. She didn't text her friends that night, so they figured that it was going really well. And the guy at the pub thought that she changed her mind and ditched him. The next day, September 18th, Simone was walking their dog through Cater Park, which is the park that she would have walked through to get to the pub. And they were a little bit off of the normal walking path. And it's there that they discovered Sabina's body. She was covered in leaves. She had her ID on her, so police were able to identify her quickly. But there was no indication of what had happened to her. The autopsy came back as inconclusive, but police have stated that the attack was extremely violent. Those details will probably be later available when the trial is actually happening and after the trial. Police took a look through CCTV footage from Sabina's apartment complex, and they immediately noticed someone suspicious. Right in front of Sabina's building, there's a man seen looking over his shoulder, putting on his hood on the CCTV footage. And there's also footage of a car passing by that police have tried to identify, only saying that the man may be connected to the vehicle. Both of these were released to the public on September 24th. The day before that, they actually arrested and questioned a 23-year-old man. And then on September 26th, a man was arrested on suspicion of her murder. He was then charged on September 27th and identified as 36-year-old Kosi Salamaj, who is an Albanian garage worker slash delivery driver. Police haven't released any information about the man that they arrested on suspicion of her murder. They also arrested and questioned a 40-year-old man about Sabina's murder, but he was later released. Police reports have stated that Kosi was on CCTV striking Sabina just steps away from her door with a 2-foot, which is about 0.6 meters, long weapon. He then is seen carrying her over his shoulder in the direction of the park. Police have not stated whether or not he is the same man from the pictures that they released. To me, it doesn't necessarily look like the same guy, but it's incredibly hard to tell, and they obviously have better equipment for that type of analysis. Sabina's sister, Jabina Yasmin Islam, said during a vigil in Kidbrook, quote, "Words cannot describe how we are feeling. This feels like we are stuck in a bad dream and can't get out of it. Our world is shattered and we are simply lost for words. No family should go through what we are going through." And right now, that's all the information that we have about Sabina's case. Now, the trial hasn't happened yet, so hopefully we'll have some updates in the future. But just on the surface level of the information that I've been able to tell you, isn't it alarming how little I know about Sabina's case?
It is. And, like, you think that there would be more outrage. Like, you can literally see him carrying her on his shoulder.
Right.
Like, that's eerie as hell.
Right. And she was murdered for no reason. Absolutely no reason. And people argue that Sabina didn't get the same attention as Sarah, for example, because Sarah was missing for a week. And she was found murdered by a police officer. And that's a serious point to consider. But it's just another example of a non-white person receiving less attention. I don't think that Sarah should have got less attention. I just think that Sabina deserves attention. And there's no reason that it's hard to find information about her case. When you search for Sabina Nessa, you'll see a picture of her. It'll be probably in her graduation cap. It's a beautiful picture.
Right. And it's like we've always said, like Gabby Petito, like her, she just like made the world news or international news or whatever, you know, and a lot of people said, oh, it's because she's a young white girl. And then there's so many other women of color who go missing every day and no, well, nobody cares and nobody puts forth the effort for these women. It's sad when you think about it. because we look different. We don't deserve this media attention. Like, let's say I went missing and you went missing around the same time. Or even if, like, something happened to me first, like, I got murdered in a specific way, and then you got murdered in that same way, which one of us would probably receive more media attention? You right. or me? It would probably be you.
Right. And also, you'll learn more about my background. It was hard to find information about Sabina's background. It wasn't just readily available to me. I guess I'm just trying to say with this that Sarah's story is horrendous and it needs to be talked about. But I don't want to not talk about Sabina just because there's not that much information. I want her case to be talked about too. And I hate that it didn't. I know that in the immediate area there was some outrage, but I hate that it doesn't get that international coverage and that it doesn't even get the national coverage that it deserves. It's frustrating.
It really is, and I could only imagine, like, how her family must feel. You know, they're probably frustrated and angry at the fact that, you know, something has happened to a person they love, and yet there's not nearly as much press about what happened to her versus this other girl. Right.
Versus a lot of other girls.
Or a lot of girls, yeah.
So I just wanted to make a point of bringing her up as well, because she, technically, her killer was caught on tape. She falls within this category. Sarah's story fell within this topic as well, and I think it's a very important story. And it's alarming, and both of these happened this year in the same area. And that's fucking horrifying.
Glad that you were able to tell us at least a little bit about Sabina with the little bit of information there is out there, because none of us would have ever probably have heard of it.
Thank you for that. But I just, you know, every time that, I know not everybody's into shorter episodes, but sometimes we only put out like 20 minute episodes. And the purpose of that is because it's a case that I want to talk about, and I'm not willing to not do it just because there's not that much information public.
Right.
The only way we can get more information is if we keep talking about it.
We'll just keep trying to do our part.
Exactly. So thank you guys so much for being such loyal and amazing listeners. We appreciate each and every one of you, old and new, to listening to us. And we have lots of exciting things coming up for 2022. So happy new year, everybody, because I guess by the time this is posted, it's after 2022 has already happened.
That's wild.
It absolutely is wild. But thank you guys so much for listening. And you can find all of our information on our website at
crafts and crime.com.
And if you click that subscribe button on our website, you will be subscribed to our newsletter, where you get every Tuesday morning that information about the episode that has been released this week. So, that week. Yeah. So, thanks guys so much. And until next time. Bye.
Bye.